Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 376 of the podcast with my first official boy of summer, the wonderful comedian Dwayne Kennedy. He is, oh gosh, he's been around enough and long enough to be a huge influence on some comedians, even if you're not as familiar with Dwayne. He is so beloved. You know, I hate the words comedian. I'm not sure why I hate them so much, but I think it's just because maybe they get overused. This is truly the case with Dwayne. I'm such a fan of his, and I was so excited to sit down and chat with him. I say first official boy of summer. This is going to be kind of the first summer for me anyway that I'm loosening up on that stuff a little bit. As you know, or anybody who's kind of listened to the podcast for a few years or for many episodes now, you know that I started the podcast with the intention of having more women's voices in podcasting, because 8 years ago the landscape was very different than it is now. And I also wanted to, you know, have the opportunity to talk about certain issues and stuff that was maybe centered a little bit more on, you know, people who identify as women. That being said, I got excited about representing other folks. So things have widened out over the time, and I've had my Boys of Summer series, but I also kind of just want to be able to talk about other stuff. If stuff's pressing, if I have the opportunity to talk to someone like Colin about things that are happening in the world that I feel passionate about, that I know many of you feel passionate about, I want to have the opportunity to do that. So you're going to have some Boys of Summer. You're going to have some non-boys, some all kinds of stuff happening this summer, and I'm excited about it, and I think you will be too. Just another quick note, if you are a Max Fun member, if you support the JV Club podcast as a member of Maximum Fun, I want to thank you and to let you know that every penny that that comes to me from the Maximum Fun side, from your membership, is being donated either to a queer positive project or organization, or to something like the Legal Defense Fund of the NAACP. It's my pleasure and privilege to go ahead and push your money over to those organizations as a way of celebrating you and me having you as listeners, and also being able to support some great causes. You can become a member of Max Fun anytime. It's not Max Fun Drive. This is just a note from me, because I love Max Fun. I love what they do, and it's listener supported. So this is just me, JV, saying if you feel comfortable joining or continuing your membership. We all know that times are very strange and uncertain right now, so we love you no matter what. But if you have the opportunity to be a member, that's where I'm coming from on it. Hopefully you will be getting lots of back issue stuff from me that makes it worth your while as well if you support the JV Club. So that's it. You are wonderful. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I look forward to bringing you more this summer. We were just going to talk about you and your new album in your teen years. So whatever feels right to talk about for you, I'm so game to talk about.
Whatever you want to talk about. Yeah, whatever you want to talk about.
That was, you know. Yeah. Well, that was definitely something that, you know, I mean, that definitely crossed my mind. I saw a couple of, I'm not a great person for social media. I find that
you and me both.
I disappear. I don't disappear into it in a good way. Like, I'm not like, oh God, I just got lost in all of this. I disappear into it. Like so 2 hours has passed and I have managed to construct one tweet. Like, I don't know how that happened. Do you know what I mean? Like, how did that time pass? And so
compared to me, then you would be prolific.
So you understand.
Absolutely.
I don't know how people are just like churning out. Like, I'm proud of myself. When I complete one Instagram post, I'm like, I did it. I'm done for the day. I'm so proud of myself. And then other people are just like, they're constantly posting. And right now I'm trying to kind of step up my game because, you know, I have enough of a community of people that I want to make it abundantly clear, although I think they already know that, you know, I believe in activism and that I certainly stand alongside everybody who's making their voices heard. But at the same time, you know, I do get kind of sucked into it. And, you know, it's tough because, like, I want to make sure that I'm acting and behaving and being a good human being outside of what I'm posting on social media. So that remains a long time problem for me.
Yeah. And, well, and I think, I mean, that's right. That's more important than being great on social media. I mean, if you're trying to, you know, I guess, what is it, build your following and your brand and all that stuff.
I'm but real just bad being at that.
A good Yeah, me too, man. My brand building sucks.
I don't, it's just not, you know, it doesn't
my,
even.
My yeah. brand is that I suck at building a brand.
I find it very appealing. So you've got a fan. You've got a fan in the brand of sucking at building your brand. But I saw, you know, I did see a couple, you know, there's always going to be at least a couple in terms of like what I see in my very small sphere of the of whatever I come across in the minimal time I'm there. But, you know, I saw some tweets, you know, about, you know, something would come from a gentleman who is, you know, saying, what about all the other people of color? And, you know, and so I did that. You know, I certainly do think in times like this, like the hardest thing to hear sometimes is that, you know, somebody with whom you hope you will be aligned in terms of your, like, what your values are and what you think is wrong with this country ends up sort of backfiring in some way and creating that kind of tension, like, or, you know, exacerbating existing tension, not to say it like came out of nowhere, but, you know,
right.
That hearing about that in Chicago is, you know, that's.
Yeah, it's distressing.
It's distressing.
But hopefully that'll calm down. And certainly, that's, you know, not all the Latinos here that are doing that, you know, by far. And there's a lot of Latinos that are speaking up and, you know, aligning themselves. And so, you know, but it's just some of the, which, and I don't even really have an issue with folks just being out there trying to protect their property if that's what they're doing. But don't be, you know, just snatching people out of cars who are driving past. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You know,
only the cops can do that.
Right. That's the cops. Uh-huh. Kid. Yeah. Right. That job has already been
That's
taken.
Right.
So you horning in on somebody else's job.
That's right. Thank you for seeing it for what it is and understanding what is wrong with it, because it may have been unclear to people what we were really saying. We're saying, please don't take the cops jobs.
Right. Because then that would be another way to indict Latinos for taking all the jobs. Now they're taking that job.
That's right.
They're taking it.
They want the jobs none of us want, except cops.
Right. Right. Oh, man.
How are you feeling about all this? How are you feeling? Is there a feeling of like this means something? Is there a feeling of, God, I hope this sticks?
Yes, you hit it exactly, Janet. I hope it sticks, because, I mean, I haven't seen anything to this degree in my whole life, but I've seen similar things to what at the time were the, you know, civil uprisings to the greatest degree they had ever happened prior to this. You know what I mean? Every time it happened. But then ultimately, everything seemed like it just goes back to regular, you know?
Yeah. And, How exhausting to want to show up for something and feel, I mean, that's not to say, again, that's sort of the plight of the Black citizen. If you keep showing up for something on a daily basis, not just one movement, not just one moment in time, not just one person who's killed, but to keep trying to show up and hope other people will show up with you and then hope they actually, like, something changes. How fucking exhausting. How exhausting.
Yeah, that's why I've given up. No, I haven't given up.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Dwayne. It's been a real pleasure. I gotta go.
You might be exhausted, but I gave up a long time ago. I'm refreshed and, But, I mean, yeah, we'll see. But, again, you know, it's one of those things where we won't really know what the significance of this event is and what these moments are until, you know, down the line in retrospect to see that, okay, people started to enact fundamental, significant, actual changes to you know, I don't know, they say dismantle white supremacy, but just to dismantle white impediment.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. And because really, if there was a true will and desire for societal equity, you know, for all people to have an opportunity, that's basically it. Because it's not, you know, nobody can be guaranteed success, quote unquote, at anything, but just to have a legitimate opportunity, that could happen tomorrow.
Yes.
If business owners, I think, you know, economic justice, if business owners, if, you know, Apple and all those other corporations and even smaller corporations, if the people who run those companies decided, you know what, we're going to be serious for real about hiring women and black folks. And I'm right now speaking about black people, just because that's, you know, this is kind of the anti-blackness thing, but everybody who's not really being hired in a fair and equitable way, or being afforded opportunity in a fair and equitable way. If those business people were to say, you know, we're going to bring these people in, give them a legitimate chance and to ascend, this could be, I think a lot of things could be resolved. I mean, economics isn't everything, but a lot of it is just because people are just poor and limited, right? You know, and get frustrated. And then I was telling somebody, you know, and I, in a way, I get tired, not tired, but, you know, people always say, well, why do the blacks, why do they tear up their own community? Why? Which, some,
like, it needs to be answered, but it's also, that's like, I sort of feel like you could put it together if you really did your homework, but at the same time, it's like, I get it. Like, of course that needs to be answered, you know, if you want people to understand, but at the same time, it's not like that much of a stretch, but anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think certainly not the only component, right? But one thing is, if you exist in a place, you know, you barely survive, and you know, you're kind of on the margins, and the conditions are thus that you don't really, like, you don't feel included.
Yeah.
And you're kind of shown, and it's demonstrated that you aren't included. Not only that you aren't included, but that you are sort of scorned, and you live in a neighborhood where most of the police that you see, most of the cops are white, you know.
Yep.
So you feel like you're living in occupied territory. You don't really have a connection. I mean, you live there, but there's nothing that you don't really have necessarily a stake in the community.
Yeah.
And they don't seem like they have a stake in you. So, hey, man, things jump off. And it's been shown. I mean, you see on television and in media that the driving force of the American economy is stuff. You know, get stuff. If you get things and you buy this thing and all these things, and that gives you value as a human being, well, I can't afford to get those things. So I guess you're saying I have no value. So now it's an opportunity for me to go get some stuff so I can have some value, because obviously you've prioritized having stuff over me, you know, having things as a value over my humanity. So now I'm just going to hit you where you live. I'm going to get some stuff. And also, you seem to value that more than me. So if I start burning stuff down, tearing stuff up, now you'll listen.
Yeah.
Because ironically, you see some of these laws now, or these motions and these you know, I think there's something going on right now in Minneapolis. So I don't know if this entire state of Minnesota, but they're changing some of their policing laws.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other side of it is that I'm sure there were black folks, and, you know, not just black people, but some other, you know, people of goodwill trying to get those laws changed for years. So that's the other thing about America. I mean, America is a violent place. You know, America regards violence. They put a premium on that. So it's like, as long as you're trying to negotiate with us in a civil way, yeah, beat it.
Yeah.
But once you start tearing stuff up, now you got their ear. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, we better start changing some laws, you know. But you could have done that in the first place.
I know. Yeah. I think The piece for me too. Well, first of all, I want to say quickly that in a recent podcast that I regularly listen to, they had an expert on who's a professor at a college in Minnesota, who ran through all of the police reform that has already happened in mm-hmm. Minnesota, and so some of this, depressingly, is like a fuck you from cops who don't care for the reform that was already put in place. It's like a child rebelling against their parents, costing the lives of people. Like, you know what?
Right.
Fuck you. You're not in charge of me. I'm a cop. Like, I don't care what stuff you've already put in place. Like, there's, you know, that's, and that I think was the thing that rang out very quickly from, you know, people in law enforcement who aren't horrible people, who are like, nobody's getting taught to put their fucking knee on a neck. Like, that's not getting taught in any kind of, you know, like, well, we got to change the way policemen are taught. Well, no one's taught that, you know, but there are lots of things around that are still being taught, or they're being taught behind the scenes, like in the good old boys, you know, those moments, like, here's what you learn. Mm-hmm. And even that is wildly imperfect and needs reform. And then you go out and somebody whose dad's dad was a cop, who's like, you know, like king of the hill in some precinct, who's like, let me tell you how we really do it. Like, that's a real thing,
right?
You know?
For real, yeah. That is a real thing. So, and that's the other part of it is, and like you were saying earlier, are things going to really change? It really doesn't. In some ways, it doesn't matter. You can have all the laws you want to have, man. If people don't have a will and a genuine desire to do something, it won't be done. You know, you can't legislate human nature. So I don't know, and I don't know how you do this. I think some of the ways are through media, and I don't know what else, but, you know, like I said, is economic opportunity where people can start to actually have encounters with people who are not like them in a way that's not in a more benign way. So you just start to see the humanity of a person. So then that cop, because, you know, a lot of people, not just white folks, but people are tribal. They stay with their groups generally. So what is it that they said, the echo chamber? So now, If you all you hang out is with a certain group of people who believe a certain thing, and you all just reinforce each other's biases and ignorances, then it doesn't matter what the training manual says. Like you said, so people have to just start to deal with each other at a human level and just start to just engage with one another, just so you can see another person's humanity, and then you take that to work with you.
Absolutely.
You know.
Oh, I think that's a really scary thing for people who've been raised a certain way, or who come from a certain environment. It's really scary to let go of the idea that you have what you have because you deserve it on some sort of fundamental level that isn't just, you came out of this woman's vagina and this other person came out of this woman's vagina, and it might as well have been flipped. You were born into everything you're born into. Does that mean that there's not like some sort of genetics? Well, yeah, if I'm predisposed to have, you know, hair loss or whatever, but like, you know, there's this, but it's very, very uncomfortable for somebody who, you know, and I say that as a person who, you know, didn't grow up with much, but I did grow up, you know, white and a cute girl with blonde hair and blue eyes. It's uncomfortable for people who were raised a certain way, or who have been taught to live with a certain kind of fear, to imagine that you really got lucky. You know, you cannot look at somebody who's like, I'm from Tucson, Arizona. I can't look at somebody who was born black in Arkansas the exact same year on the exact same day as me and me go, I don't know what to say. I'm me. You know, I kind of deserve what I have in a way that person doesn't. I don't know. It's just, you know, it's just how, you know, it's like, no, that's like, if you truly can understand that you could have been born into anything, then you have to have a level of empathy that that certain, you know, the people are just not expressing. But it's scary to express that, because then you don't have a reason to justify your actions or your fear, right? As soon as you start accepting that, then you really are in the shit, because then it's like, oh, so I have no reason to feel entitled the way I do. None at all? Okay. Like, oh, that's terrifying, you know?
Yeah. But, and like you were saying, and I think, and it's human nature. I mean, like you said, people who have whatever they have accomplished means this and that, and it kind of castigate those who don't as it being somehow, you know, well, that's the reason you don't have things, is because of you know, they assign it to character, well, because you don't do this and you haven't been this. And, you know, the reason I have these things is because I am these, you know, so it's easy. I mean, we all do that. We all rationalize and fool ourselves and think we have stuff because whatever, you know, whatever we've accomplished, you know, it's ego.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think about, and I swear to you, I'm just enjoying this conversation, but I seriously am going to get, I do want to get into your teenage years, because I think, A, that's what my podcast is supposed to be sort of about, but also I want to hear how, because you've done such great stuff and you've worked on not only your own great comedy, but you've also worked on shows that, you know, again, kind of ironically, like the fact that you and I would be talking when all this is happening, like I'm talking to somebody who has been a voice in entertainment in one way or another about these very things in a way that reflect far further back than, you know, this week I put on a Black Lives Matter t-shirt or whatever. But when you said what you said just now, I did admittedly, and this has been on my mind this year anyway, because of some Supreme Court stuff that we've all kind of been paying attention to. But what do you personally, Dwayne, feel about like a Clarence Thomas point of view? You know, the sort of like, because that feels the anti of, you know, that feels like the kind of person that I perceive, and I could be wrong, but I do perceive him as shaming Black communities for not lifting themselves up, like somehow they need to be punished for that. Does that ring true for you?
Or? Yeah, I mean, yeah, he kind of is one of the kind of personifies what I'm talking about. It's like people, again, the ego, because he's against what, set asides or whatever it is, the for education.
Yeah.
Something that he himself benefited from.
I think he was affirmative action, all that kind of stuff.
Affirmative.
He was just like, no, 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 no.
Yeah. It was good for me because, you know, I'm me. But you all, you know, you need to lift yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, people, you know how that is. I mean, they compartmentalize. You know, I can do things because it's me. But now you, on the other hand, you got to live up to these certain, have these certain values and principles. And yeah, I don't, man, Clarence Thomas is, I don't want to, you know, I used to like be really harsh on that cat, which I mean, I don't think he's a great person. I think he's self-hating. I don't know if he hates himself. Maybe he doesn't hate, maybe he loves himself. I don't know. Yeah. Certainly, I don't know if he's too fond of Black folk, though. I don't think I think it's important to him to be what he perceives to be a good example to white people.
Right.
You know, I think he's cognizant of that, you know. Which, you know what? The other side of it is that we all come up under this, in this with colonized minds to some degree,
right.
You know, and however you deal with that, you deal. So as I've gotten older, I don't, you know, it's easy to say, oh, you Black, you should think like this. And if you don't, but you know, we all deal with, you know, being Black, being a woman, hey, being white, whatever that is, whatever that issue is. But you know, you deal with it and you learn to deal with it as you move through this life, however you do.
Yeah, I'm not asking, and yeah, I don't mean to put you in the position where like suddenly it's your job to call out Clarence Thomas. I think for me, it's just I've become with him and with every Supreme Justice judge and anybody in the criminal justice system. It's just like you're right. He's a human being, and he has had the very specific and unique experience that he has growing up and being the person that he is. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, depending on who it is and what their experience is and what they're bringing to the table, you're always dealing with a human being. And when the human being is the person that's, you know, 1/8 or 1/12 or 1/24 responsible for how other people serve prison sentences or don't, or what prisons look like, or what a woman's body can and can't do, all of that kind of stuff, like, that's intense. You know what I mean? Like, I remember when I was an assistant manager at Pottery Barn in San Francisco, and I was like, you know, remember, like, hiring and firing people at 21, feeling like, I don't think I should have this authority. Like, I'm not, I'm not that grown up, and like, I'm sure I'm doing things that I don't even know I'm doing. Now try to imagine being the person who's like, let me interpret this country's entire history of law and make a decision based on whether or not I had breakfast. It just feels like, oh, that's so scary, but that's democracy. Yeah. I guess.
I know, man. I was when Trump got elected, I started questioning democracy. Like, man, maybe democracy is not a good idea. But I mean, it's certainly a decent idea. But to participate, and I'm not saying I'm qualified. That's why I'm like, to run for president, man, I think you should at least have to pass a psychological exam.
Agreed.
You know, you gotta take it. Well, although, maybe this is not making my point now with everything that's happened, but you know, you got to take a psych exam to be a cop. Well, but I guess that's just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, sure. What's that exam?
I probably undercut my own point. Yeah.
Well, it all depends on what's on the test. Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
If you're looking for a new comedy podcast, why not try the Beef and Dairy Network? It won Best Comedy at the British Podcast Awards in 2017 and 2018. Also, ILO.
There were no horses in this country until the mid to late 60s.
Specialist bovine arse vet.
Both of his eyes are squid's eyes.
Yogurt buffet.
She was married to a bacon farmer who saved her life.
Farm-raised snow leopard.
Download it today. That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast from MaximumFun.org. Also, maybe start at episode 1, or weirdly, episode 36, which for some reason requires no knowledge of the rest of the show.
Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in the Chicago area?
I grew up in Chicago, and then the south suburbs, and then back in Chicago.
What was your high school experience like? Did you go to a public school? Was it huge?
I went to a public school, and when my parents divorced, we moved, and I went to it. It was a predominantly white school, and I had fun. There was a few very. I think at the time I went to this school, it was predominantly, it was probably like 98-99% white. It's not anymore, but it was when I. So there was a few black folks there who then became my friends, because anytime you saw a black person at that school, you just glommed on to, okay, you're going to be my friend. We're going to be friends. You know.
Yeah. Why? How did that? So that just worked out in terms of like where they lived. The school district was what it was. And were you nervous about that going in? Did you have like an awareness that things were going to change?
I was probably nervous just it being a new experience, and I was always kind of shy in a way, and you know, kind of a cautious person. So that, and then I'm trying to think, because I don't have anything to compare it to. But I mean, I had some fun. I had some good times, but then I had some things that happened that, you know, I always felt kind of, not always, but certainly were kind of intimidating or menacing, you know,
right?
Because I would hear things. I had a few things happen to me, but you know, like everybody does growing up. But I had some things that were specifically like racial incidents. But for the most part, probably the racism I was experiencing, I wasn't even aware of, because it's probably things people were doing that I, you know, that were benign acts of racism.
Right.
You know, like maybe not including you in on something,
right.
You know, those type of things that you don't even you're not even aware that you're being, discriminated against is the word, but just slighted or whatever it might be,
right.
You know,
what was your, was the neighborhood you lived in? Was that also like a predominantly white neighborhood?
At the time it was, yeah. The time we moved in was predominantly white at the time. Like I said, my parents divorced and we moved out. My mother moved us out there. And although the first Latino, first, he was, this cat was a Mexican-American. He was the first Mexican I'd ever met, very first Mexican-American. But also, he was the first Mormon I ever met.
Oh, now we're talking.
Yeah, his family was not Catholic. You know, traditionally, they were Mormon, yeah. Man. That was crazy. Yeah.
How was he practicing? Or was he like, all right, Dwayne, let me just tell you what's going on here. My parents, because I say this, by the way, my mom was Mormon and I had to go to church with her, even though that was not something I believed in. So when you use the M word, I really perk up. And then actually I have a great friend who's a wonderful graphic novelist, Terry Blass, who wrote a graphic novel about growing up Mexican American and Mormon and like how much of a mind fuck that was. How much of the sort of Mormon side did you see as his buddy?
He never talked to me about being a Mormon or anything, you know, at all. Because we were kids. Yeah. So he, you know, he was more interested in music. You know, he played piano. And so we talked about music and listening to music and being a Mormon. No, that didn't really come up at all. I don't know like temple? They go to temple?
Yeah, Mormons? You go to a regular church, but then if something special's going on, then I guess you go to a temple. I've never actually been to one.
We didn't really talk about that at all. And I had been to his crib a couple times for dinner, but I didn't see anything, you know, it seemed all the same to me. Yeah.
To be honest with you, they weren't doing their jobs because they actually probably should have tried to get you to come to church with them. That's part of it.
Well, but you know what, though? But here's the thing, though. At the time, because this was when black people weren't allowed in the church.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. How could I forget about that? How could I forget about that? It's a classic. It's a classic symptom of the Mormon church being always too far behind everything else. Oh
yeah,
my God. So. Oh, well then listen, you're just lucky that you were able to come over. Those sound like good people. I got to tell you something. They sound like good people.
Right, right. Man, he was not even cool cat.
How was the school experience just academically? Did you care about that stuff? Were you impatient to get out and be, you know, a person outside of high school? Did you have like sports stuff you liked? What were you into?
The only thing in school I was good at was art and gym. English a little bit, but I wasn't a great student. I just went to school and just kind of was there, didn't really participate. You know, like I said, unless it was art, gym, you know, like I said, a little English, but I was mostly, you know, just go there to see my friends, talk, hang out. I mean, I wasn't hanging out, like I wasn't in the hallways, but just, you know, I was just enjoying the company more so than applying myself academically.
Yeah.
So I think I used to think this when I was young, like, man, this is great. Just being young and being alive and just to be in the world. Not so much like preparing to be anything else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But just, yeah.
I don't think I was.
This is cool.
Either.
I got, okay, mission accomplished in my mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I didn't know I was going to have to prepare myself to be something.
What was the art stuff that you took to?
I just love to draw.
Nice.
You know, sketch and whatnot, pencil and that kind of thing. I think about, man, I need to get back and start doing that again. Start to use whatever talents I got, especially now with people spending so much time in the house.
Yeah.
And or away from other, you know, other activities. So.
Drawing to me always seemed like just something I should never even bother trying to develop. It just seemed like something that if I was going to be good at it, I would have, you know, I would be good at it. And I found it so intimidating that I just like on this podcast a lot. I think it comes up a lot, this idea of like, you sort of, when you're younger, you can either go like, I could do anything. Or in some cases, you see someone else being good at something and you're like, they got that. That's not for me. I see that person is very good at this thing. I don't even know how to begin to start to learn how to do this thing. So I guess I just won't, because I guess that's something that I already, you know, like as if everyone's path is the same. Like, well, if I were going to become an illustrator, you know, if I was going to get good at drawing, I would have done that by now at 14 or whatever. So I guess I guess that's something that belongs to someone else. You know,
I had no foresight, which I'm thinking now. I still don't have much foresight, but. I mean, back then, as a kid, I'm thinking, because I'm as old as I've ever been, I will always be in this state. I don't know why it didn't like dawn on me, like I said, to prepare to be something when I got old. Although when I was younger, here's the thing now, I loved stand-up comedy, just watching it on TV. So I did kind of do that, but I don't ever remember saying, man, that's not, you know what, that's the only thing I really think about that I thought about being as that I thought about as a kid that I could possibly do when I got older was stand up. That was it, I think.
Yeah. Or
a musician, but that didn't work out.
Did you try?
Yeah, I took guitar lessons, but I didn't have, you know, I think it helps when you have talent.
Oh, listen. I took a fair amount of guitar, and I'm not terrible, and I still never practice and never do anything with it. So, who were you watching do stand up that you thought, now wait a minute, my brain works kind of like this, like maybe I could do this?
Well, it was like the, you know, Cosby and Pryor and Robert Klein and you know, George Carlin and everybody, just everybody. And then, you know, people who are much less famous, but just people you see on television, on the Johnny Carson show, on the Tonight Show. And, you know, just seeing that, it's like, man, that, I thought that was extraordinary. How could they just take, you know, because it was a certain logic, you know, some of these comedians, you know, maybe not a physical comedian, but just somebody who's just talking employing a certain logic that would make sense, but yet be funny. Mm-hmm. Like, man, that seemed extraordinary to me. And I was kind of, I think I was funny as a kid to around people who I wasn't shy around, and I could make people laugh. So
you're talking about such a rich time too in comedy, in terms of like the perspectives and the styles, you know, even just the people that you listed, like where everybody is so different. It wasn't like, you know, you know, I was talking to someone recently who was talking about the like the Catskills type of humor. That's like Milton Berle. Like everyone sort of has the sort of same background or the sort of same material from a certain era that is like a little more cookie cutter. And then like how mind blowing it is when you start to see, you know, Richard Pryor performing. And George Carlin and people that you're just like, oh shit! Like there's a lot of different ways to go about this thing.
Right, exactly. That's the thing I loved about it, which I still do. It's like reading different philosophers. You know,
I
you ever
do
that. And then you're just like, man, this philosophy is different than that philosophy, but they all make sense.
I love that comparison. I would say I wish that people jumped to the comparison of comedy and philosophy more often. I think you just like hit something in a deep vein of me that's like, yes. That's a really great, I mean, that's a, you know, people talk about the philosophy of writers, you know, and sort of, but like comedy is, that's a hugely public facing, accessible way into understanding some like kind of basic philosophies that are about being a human being on a daily basis that I think is so special. And I love that. I love what you just said.
All right. I like being useful.
what about dating? Did you have any special relationships when you were in high school?
I had some girlfriends. But here, you know what? I've messed up so many people's lives, but that's kind of overstatement. But I had girlfriends, but I was like, I had a girlfriend and she wanted to go to prom. I was thinking about this just the other day. and how, but I didn't go to prom. I was so shy and I was scared. I didn't want to dance. I was scared to dance. I didn't know how to dance. I was like, man, I don't know how to dance. She's going to want to slow dance. I would worry about it so much. I avoided going, taking her to prom because put it this way. I avoided going to prom. She actually went. She went with somebody else. She wasn't going to not go to prom because I had issues. If that's
your version of messing up someone's life, then you're a better person than I am.
No. I've done some, as time went on, I did anyway. Yeah. But yeah, I had a couple, Yeah, I guess we a little bit.
Do you have siblings when your parents split up and you went with your mom? Was it just the two of you, or do you have whether
more? No, two younger sisters.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
How much younger?
5 years and 8 years, I believe.
Okay, yeah. So you probably weren't faced with, like, I'm a senior, she's a sophomore, and my friends are, like, going after her, wanting to date her, which sounds like a nightmare to me.
Oh, yeah, right, because what could I do? I can't fight, I'll tell you, now, I was talking to a friend of mine the other night about this, like, regrets, that's what we talk about. Man, what do you regret? What would you have done differently? I think going back, if I could have done this differently, what would I have done? I would have taken martial arts as a kid. I would have done that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because
I kind of feel the same way.
Yeah, because just some of the incidents I've had in my life and encountered, it's like, man, if I knew how to fight, I would be fighting this person or putting a stop to a fight, But I always felt like, man, I'd be angry enough to fight, but I knew I didn't know how to fight. So I figured, let me just go somewhere and let this anger subside because I don't want to get murdered.
First of all, I think not getting murdered is always the best way to go. That's a tough thing about, like, anybody I've ever known which is not very many people, but anybody I've ever known who spent any time in law enforcement, be it like a defense attorney or assistant to the prosecutor or like just a cop or whatever. I mean, across the board. Like it's kind of eerie because I think many of us who feel like we have good hearts and want to show up for people emotionally, whatever that whatever it means to show up for somebody, and we like to think that if something were going down between two people and we could help stop it, that we would want to. And then across the board, everyone I know who actually has had day-to-day experience with that stuff goes, don't get involved. Never get involved. You know what I mean? Get out of there. Don't break up a knife fight. You'll die. Don't break up this. You'll get hit. Don't stop this girl from being, because she's going to, and then you'll get hit on the head with it. You're like, oh, but what about like how I'm a hero? What about how, right. What about how I jump in and I save the day with my karate? What about that? Nope. And they're like, no, just, get out of there. Don't do it.
It's just going to be injuries and litigation.
Exactly. Like, oh, okay, that's not a very romantic reality, but I guess I have to pay attention because you know, these are people who are seeing it maybe a little more often. But I talk about those constant reminders of like the ways in which you think you're jaded and then you find out like you are so many miles away from jaded. When you hear stuff, you're like, oh.
I think that some of those cats like who had those visions or fantasies of avenging wrongs or saving people who could actually draw, just became comic book artists.
100%
created, comic book characters. Yeah.
Did you ever read comics?
Oh, I did. Yeah, a little bit. Spider-Man and Batman and the traditional ones. Not so much Superman, because Superman didn't really appeal to me that much. And then you don't even know why until you get older and realize, oh, it's because basically he's omnipotent. And there's no drama to that.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Dave Hill from before. And I'm very excited to bring Dave Hill's podcasting incident back to Maximum Fun, where it belongs. You can get brand new episodes every Friday on MaximumFun.org or, you know, wherever. And while my partner Chris Gersbeck and I might lack in specific subject matter on our podcast, we make up for in special effects. Chris, add something cool right here. Also, we have explosions, animal noises, and sometimes even this. Dave Hill's podcasting incident, every Friday on Maximum Fun. Chris, do another explosion right here.
All right, well, I want to get into this MASH game with you, and I can't remember if there was Sheila warned you about this at all, but it really requires very little on your part. MASH is a game that many particularly young women but played when I was little and continue to play now, and it's basically like a fantasy future slash alternate universe. Which when I saw like Into the Spideyverse, I was like, yes, this is what my MASH games have been this whole time. I've been spinning off these other new alternate universes for people with my MASH games. They get me. But so basically, I'm gonna ask you some questions. You're just gonna give me answers off the top of your head. I'll okay. do some what I can. Is not even rudimentary enough to be called math. I'll basically just do like some strokes of my pen, and then we're gonna reveal your 100% guaranteed alternate universe MASH life.
Okay.
So MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house. So that's baked into the game. Basically,
it stands for what?
Mansion, apartment, shack, or house.
Oh, okay.
So what's built in is what kind of house slash like what your abode is going to be like, and then everything else I'm going to throw at you with categories of our own that I'm going to take, and hopefully you will enjoy talking about because it's some sort of reflection of stuff we've talked about. But then there's also just some basic categories like the one I'm about to do, which is whether you have been there in real life or not. Three places in the world, we're going to make it so that you can teleport to them. So getting there is no problem. COVID-19. Not a thing in this alternate universe. And you can just chill in one of these places. So like a vacation home that we're going to give you to escape to whenever you want. Three places in the world you'd like to go.
New York, San Francisco, Michigan. Is that too vague? Michigan, do I need a specific place?
No.
All right.
Beautiful. Okay, next category. Let's do three... comic book superpowers, three comic book related superpowers.
Okay.
Which is to say that you can like magically lift a lot of comic books, but like three superpowers you would find in a comic book that you wouldn't mind having.
Oh man. Okay. Now this is a good game. I like this. I'll be thinking about this. The show is over. Three superpowers I would like to have. Super strength. I was going to say, X-ray vision so I can see the white man's motives. Nah, but nah.
Oh, if only they were visible in just that exact way.
No.
Somehow it would be helpful.
Now, what are the superpowers?
The two most classic that get brought up in conversations tend to be like flight or invisibility. Neither of which I necessarily would want for myself.
Yeah, I don't
but
think
those
I
are
wanna...
ones that come up. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about flying. I don't know if I want to fly.
Super speed, I wouldn't mind. Or like sometimes I have dreams where I'm not flying. I'm just like bounding as if like the ground is a trampoline.
I was going to say,
sort of like, it's like anti-gravity kind of almost.
But I'll say super speed as well as super strength. Invisibility, great. Up until about a week ago, black folks already had that. I had to get sociological on you, you know.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
But no, let me see. Okay, so super strength, super speed, and I don't know if this is a superpower. Do they have any superheroes who are like just super smart? I guess like Professor X or somebody.
Yeah, I'm going to put super smart because that encompasses all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think that's great.
Okay.
Okay, great. Next category, three foods that in this reality that we live in, you and me, either you're allergic to, or you know, it's that thing you wish you could eat a lot of, but you start to feel sick and you're like, I'm not ready to feel sick yet. This tastes too good. Or something that's like hard to get because it's expensive or far away. In this world, everything's equal. So three things that you would love to be able to eat whenever you want, snap of your fingers and zero ramifications.
Yes. Okay. I was going to give you a type of food, but that I don't want to change the game. Because I was going to say sushi, but that's not a specific.
Oh, no,
food.
You could say sushi. For sure you could say sushi.
Sushi is my
jam. Because that's like the same as pizza. It's like pizza, the perfect food. You don't have to get more specific than that.
Okay, sushi.
Beautiful.
Here's something I would love to eat all the time if there were no physical consequences. German chocolate cake.
Oh, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Now we're talking. And sushi's healthy. German chocolate cake is just, you know, beautiful. And let me see. Okay, here's a food. I was gonna say black on you. I'm gonna get maybe black or southern on you. Chitlins. You know what chitlins are?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Basically anything in the South that ends up in a fryer of any kind, it's like, yeah, give it to
me. Yeah. Chitlins. Why did I say chitlins? I love chitlins, but I don't eat them that often. Chitlins are one of those things that I've eaten them since I was a kid. But if I was just introduced to chitlins now, I probably wouldn't eat them.
Oh, I totally get that. I feel like there's a few things like that for me too. But you know what? That's what this game is for. We're living in an imaginary world. Let's get some chitlins in there. Why not? Okay, next category, three movies that you can jump into and just be in. You're not reliving the plot. You're not a character in there. It's just like an escape. Like you just get to get in there and just hang.
Oh, wow. See, the movies I like are movies like, I don't want, in real life, I wouldn't be in one involved in like The Godfather, Goodfellas.
You'd be surprised how many people decide they want to go into The Godfather. It's very popular. People are ready to go in and risk getting shot to be with the Corleones, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
They're ready.
Well, what the heck? I'll be cliche. I say The Godfather, Forrest Gump.
Great.
And trying to think of a movie that, like a romantic comedy or something.
Oh, sure.
You know what? And I say Black Panther.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those movies that I just disappeared into it so hard in such an enjoyable way. And then I was shooting something in Georgia and we like drove up onto, you know, just like a field with a farm next to it, like a barn next to it. And they're like, well, this is Wakanda.
Oh, really?
I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, this is where we shot those scenes. And I was like, future, don't tell me that.
Right.
In the future, I don't want to imagine it being next to a barn.
Well, they say don't meet your heroes and
don't meet
where your movies were shot.
It's so true. That is exactly right. Okay.
Yeah.
Next category. This is a MASH game. A MASH game is not complete without some romance. So this is your opportunity to name three lovely ladies from any period of time. They can be fictional characters, real people, any age, any era that you would like to have maybe some romantic/sexy times with in this alternate universe we're building for you.
Yeah, that starts with Angela Bassett.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And then
I can't remember the first thing I saw her in. I mean, I feel like it was like pre Stella Gets Her Groove Back. She showed up. I mean, obviously playing Tina Turner, but like she's definitely one of those people that the first time you see her in anything, it's like you really sit up and take notice. You're like, wait, hold on. The rules just changed. Who is this? What's going on? Like, who is this amazing goddess? What's happening?
Exactly. Like, who is this movie star in this movie? And some of her face is dramatic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Angela Bassett, Dorothy Dandridge.
Ah, very nice.
And Pam Grier.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Fabulous. I was going to say Scarlett Johansson, but I'm going to say Pam Grier.
All right. I like that you're giving it up for Pam. She's got a special place in my heart as well.
Okay.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, next category. Let's do three musicians, bands, composers, singer-songwriter, whatever you want to assign for this, who is basically that three different musicians that you would like to compose like a soundtrack to your life. So,
oh man, that's a good one too.
All songs. That's all for you.
Yeah.
That capture your experience of being you.
I say The National.
Oh, second that.
The Hold Steady.
Nice.
And Gil Scott-Heron.
Great.
And just for the record, Bob Dylan rules over everything, but you know, I'm gonna stick with those three I gave you.
I like it. You don't. Yeah. This Bob Dylan's like the prom. You're like, I don't know if Bob's ready to just have to do a soundtrack for me.
Right.
I gotta work my way up to Bob.
I gotta have a better life for Bob to score it.
You're going to be in great shape if you get any one of these three. I think these are fantastic choices. Okay, next category. There's two more categories. So quickly, next category is, let us do. I like this one because I'm curious to see what you'll say. So we're going to take wherever you are now, and we're just going to add a magical room to your house, to your apartment, whatever that is, that has sort of a purpose that is not being met with where you are now. So it could be you walk in and it's a forest. It could be you walk in, it's a recording studio. Any extra room, and it's like, you know, size is not an issue.
Okay, a studio. That's what I want. A studio, art studio to paint and draw.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And then two more of some other purpose.
A gym. I mean, I do push-ups and stuff in a room, but maybe a little gym, you know?
Yeah.
And a library.
Nice.
So I could look at all the books that I'm never going to read.
Don't you know that you can just go into a beautiful library and osmose all the words and thoughts? If you stay there long enough, eventually that stuff's gonna just like sink in, I think.
Oh yeah, like a movie I never saw, but Limitless. Like, isn't that kind of the premise of Limitless?
Oh yeah, yeah. Or even The Matrix, which is one of the things I say sometimes.
Oh,
I'm
right.
Like, oh, you download this skill like it's a chip or a pill you take, and suddenly you're like, I know Kung Fu.
Right. The Matrix, right.
That's basically what this whole MASH game is. Okay, and last category, let's say three people from any time in history, regardless who they are, whether they're painters, comedians, writers, three people that you would have liked to collaborate on something with.
Okay, Leonardo da Vinci.
Great.
Jack Johnson.
Nice.
I don't know if there'll be much collaboration going on with any of those people, but okay. And
no, in this universe, they're happy to have you.
And
there
Tesla,
you go. Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
That's a nice group. Very different group. Okay. Pick a number between 1 and 7.
Okay, 5.
All right, great. So I'm going to do my little like eeny, meeny, miny, mo thing that I use this, what I use this number for. And if you, in the meantime, I would love for you to tell the fine listeners about the album, where they can get it, where they can find you and follow you and all that good stuff.
Oh, Janda, thanks for everything. You would, man.
Oh my gosh.
Shoot. The album is called Who the Hell is Dwayne Kennedy? And it's available on Oakhead Records through Bandcamp. So Oakhead Records, Bandcamp, Who the Hell is Dwayne Kennedy? And I'm on Facebook. That's the, like, I guess, old school at this point. But Facebook, Twitter.
Still very alive, though. Still very alive. That
Yeah. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Although Instagram, I have exactly one post. Up until about a month and a half ago, whenever the album was released, that's when I added that post of the picture of the album cover. Prior to that, I had no post, but I had 52 followers.
Oh, well, there you go.
People couldn't
wait to
see what I wasn't doing.
Yeah. That's just the troops. They're ready, willing, and able to show up. For if and when you ever decide, it doesn't cost anything for them to just keep it open.
Yeah.
You post something, they're gonna see it.
Yeah,
they're
so see it. Since I put that picture up, now I think I got 140, I don't know, 45, something, whatever I got. But I still don't have anything up there other than the one picture.
You know? That's like that's basically your earning interest in a bank. It's like you put a little bit of money down and then you walked away and now you're just like amassing the interest and there's just going to collecting.
That was with my Twitter account, it was inactive for a year because anyways, this is a whole story. I got a new phone, which I couldn't access my Twitter account somehow. Forgot the password, this and that. Finally got it straightened out. And in that year that I was inactive, I think I added like 200 or 300 followers. How does that work?
I know.
I'm more interesting when I'm not around.
Oh my God. I could not speak your language more on social media. So you're not going to get any judgment from me for having one follower, not being on it at all. It is understandable. That's exactly what could have happened to me. I would have like gotten blocked out of Twitter, and then a week later, I swear to you, I would have been like, "And what was Twitter again? That seems so long ago to me."
Right.
I just would have out of sight, out of minded it so fast.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm excited about this alternate universe. This future, this however we want to think about it. I think you've got some very exciting stuff going on. First of all, I'm excited to share with you that you have a, wait for it, mansion in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Which is basically the equivalent of 5 mansions anywhere else in the world.
I know,
so
that's right.
Well done. Well done on your beautiful mansion in SF. Okay. You want to get up there from here. Don't worry. You don't even need to get in a car because you have super speed. So you can just tear right up the 5. You could tear up the 101. Hell, tear up the 1. It's going to take you no time at all. You can go the scenic way.
Okay.
Super speed. When you get there, you're probably going to be very hungry because super speed does burn a lot of calories. I want you to rest assured you can have unlimited sushi, zero cost, zero ramifications, just as much as you want forever. You are also at home where you are now in the Chicago area. You have a beautiful art studio as part of your home. Unsurprisingly linked to that, you collaborated with, just a guy named Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
So here we have some combining of arts and sciences. So I'm sure you're working on all kinds of great stuff in this art studio of yours. Yeah. You can also, if you just want to take a break, jump into Forrest Gump. Whenever you want. So you also are like traveling all through time, which I think is super awesome. You have a soundtrack to all of this and more provided to you by the Hold Steady.
Yeah.
And speaking of holding someone steady, I just really want to, I want to pause to let people turn off the podcast right now for that joke. Speaking of holding someone steady. I'm very glad you elected to stay with her because you did end up with a very sexy, smart, funny, and wonderful Pam Grier.
Yeah. Oh man.
So well done, you.
You know what? Now I'm sad. This show was actually better than my real life. Better than my actual life. Like, oh man. I wish I could be back.
There is the danger of that. There is the danger of But listen, live in that space. It's happening for you. It's happening in this alternate universe. Dip into it and cherish those fun things that you just got. And everyone, I encourage you very strongly to listen. Social, you want to go surprise Dwayne and add a bunch more followers to his social media as just kind of I did it, even though you're never on it. Feel free to do so. But if nothing else, make sure you check out that album. There's one last thing that it's Steve Agee's fault because when I said I've been doing the podcast for a while, and I said, I wanted to have podcast guys sometimes. Like when I started this podcast, there just weren't that many voices for women in podcasting. Now that's not as much the case. And there's so many great dudes that I wanted to hear, like what was their experience being a teenager, and so many listeners who were asking. And I said, maybe if I just do it in the summer. And Steve Agee's like, yeah, I can call it your Boys of Summer series. And I was like, oh, I'm going to.
Right.
I'm going to. And I'm going to, and I will see it, and I will raise you a, I'm going to make them sing some of Boys of Summer at the end of every episode.
Okay.
Do you know that song? The
I can't see you. The Boys of Summer. She had the radio on. And, she had something top turn lights, something about lights are low.
Count
me down, Janet. Help me out.
let's see. I can't see you. Your brown skin shining in the sun.
Yeah, right. Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Sunglasses.
I'm like, don't look back. You can never look back.
Never look back. Oh, that's a good part. That's a good part. That one's out on the road today. I saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. Little voice inside my head
said, "Don't look back. You can never look back." Yeah,
that's it. You've absolutely fulfilled the requirement and so much more. So thank you for being a good sport about that. It's become
one of the most
embarrassing things for me to ask people to do. Yet I continue to do it. So
no, you should ask them to sing a. No, you know what? You do. No, I don't want to do that. Start. I don't want to go dude on you. Janet, this is what you need to do. I'm just going to shut my mouth and, thank you for letting me be on the show. That's what I'm going
to
do.
Thank you so much for doing it. It was such a pleasure talking to you about big stuff, little stuff, everything in between. And for the listeners, I will talk to you guys next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.